Here comes McDavid busting in. Can't get it by DeCord. Gets a second chance. Can't get it by DeCord.
TSN 1200.
Well, Joey DeCord will be having making those saves in a uniform of the Seattle Kraken to make those saves on Connor McDavid. Because that's his future home. Maybe not this season. We'll have to wait and see on that. But he was the choice yesterday as the Kraken made their expansion picks. And Joey DeCord is the choice from Ottawa. Welcome back to the show, everybody. 8:16 here on a Thursday morning with J.R. Simmer and Hammer. And let's get right to the phone lines and bring in our next guest, our TSN Hockey Insider, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. We say hello and good morning to Dave Poulin. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, JR. And you're not the only person that's playing highlights of the player they lost this morning because everyone thinks they lost. And I'm laughing because I'm sitting in Toronto and they're shattered at losing Jared McKinnon and never played a game for them. It's even worse because it's hypothetical.
Yeah, that's true. Or it could be Philadelphia. I'll be honest with you, Dave. And listen, you would know players way better than I do. I've never even heard of the guy that Philadelphia lost. So there we go.
Yeah, actually, they did really like him. Tourinski is his name, Carson Tourinski, and they really liked him. It's the nature of it, right? It really is. But I'm laughing because McCann, hypothetically, you know, they went through all different scenarios on whether he'd be allowed to go to the Leafs lounge, you know, alumni lounge after games. Would he get a Leafs alumni jacket, you know, and all the different factors. But, you know, interestingly enough, guys, the only team effectively that lost two players to Seattle is Pittsburgh. And they lost two pretty good players. They lost Jared McCann, you know, from their roster, and now he went through Toronto, and they acquired a young prospect, Philip Hallander, and a seventh rounder. But then they lost Brandon Tanev, you know, who I think they really wanted to keep. And so, you know, they're a team that, and maybe they had, you know, maybe it was about moving money, and maybe there's another move on the horizon, and we're all kind of waiting for 1 o'clock today when the trade freeze rate, comes off, and we can see exactly what else Seattle did and why they may have chosen some of the players they, you know, elected to choose, and whether that had to do with the team they took them from or there's another deal in the works. You know, they looked like they loaded up on defense. They had a pretty good group of defensemen, a dozen defensemen, and they didn't go out far on money. And, you know, so they have eight guys who will be paid after one full calendar year, and then two of them are my choice, and that they signed Oleksiak and Larson. And, you know, after that, it dwindles really fast. So when this money continues to compress for the cap, they're going to have more and more. So if it stays flat for another year or two, and you start picturing around the NHL who might be coming off deals then, forget about today, that's when Seattle is going to have more money than anybody else even imagines having. So it looks like a different model than Vegas had and a different philosophy. And, you know, and again, not to be too hypothetical, but we're looking at the next couple of drafts and kids like Shane Wright coming up, and you're saying, wow, you know, I mean, the draft could be good for the next couple of years. So is that the route that Seattle is going to take?
So, I'm kind of trying to figure out why they went the route that they did. And a lot of general managers, including Brad Treliving, when he lost Giordano, said, listen, the price was just too high for us, you know, what Seattle wanted for us to give up the compensation. So do you think that Ron Francis was, look, I'm gonna ask for a lot, and if I don't get it, I'm going to go kind of in a different route in who I choose and not, you know, obviously, you know, pick a Tarasenko because they're not going to give me anything. And so they've gone with plan B, which is I'm going to go with kind of this lesser known group for the most part and either build, as you said, through the draft or take advantage of teams that are going to run into cap problems in the next couple of years.
It appears that, you know, the latter is going to be the case. Now, they are hard to play against, you know, like I immediately put a checking line together of Brandon Tanev, Yanni Gourde, Mason Appleton. Well, that's a great third line. You know, where they lack is at the top of it. And Jordan Eberle would be a first-line right winger for them. And I guess Jared McCann would be their best offensive pickup at the center position. But, you know, it looks like a team that is going to be able to check and be able to skate and be hard to play against. And defense is their best position by far. I mean, you know, you'd have a top four arguably with, I guess, Giordano and Adam Larson and Oleksiak and Vince Dunn will be in the mix, and the Fleury brothers will be in there. Carson Soucy is a guy from Minnesota. A lot of people don't know about, but Minnesota really liked him. The young kid from Detroit was intriguing, Chalowski, who burst onto the scene. He's played over 100 NHL games. He's only 23 and sort of burst onto the scene and then tempered back a little bit in Detroit. So, you know, there's some youth in there, but I guess they can skate and they're hard to play against would be the first two things I would say, you know, about Seattle.
Pooley, do you see as far as salary cap maybe happening now as we get into free agency, then if some teams want to sign some guys and are at a squeeze, they'll turn to Seattle and try to move some contracts and maybe add some real nice picks for Seattle?
I do, Simmer. That issue is not going to go away.
No.
And in fact, it's going to compound for teams. It's only going to get more significant. And, you know, I mean, maybe the loudest expression of that will come out of Boston later today, and Drager's reporting that they're close to a deal with Taylor Hall, and it looks like it could be somewhere in the 4-year, $6 million per year range. So if you looked at that alone and said it's 2021, and he just signed a deal for three less years in the exact same money as he signed in 13-14, so 8 calendar years ago, And 8 calendar years ago, guys, the cap was $64 million. And that's the deal he got. And now it's $81.5 million. But the market is so tight that he got the same deal for much less term, after winning a Hart Trophy, by the way. And so I think you're going to get decisions made by players. And Taylor Hall was in Boston for a brief period of time, but, you know, by all indications, likes it, thinks it's a good situation for him. So I think you're going to start to see those decisions made. But there's still contracts, significant contracts that are, you know, weighted around teams' cap situations. And that's only going to get more advantageous for Seattle and worse for everybody else.
When you talked to us yesterday, you had put together, I think, 28 of the 30 picks that you said. And you said, you know what, I think I've got a playoff team here on a not very deep Pacific division. Now you've seen the actual picks they've made. Do you think that Seattle is a playoff team? As it sits now?
As it sits right now, it's going to be a battle for them. I'd have them in they'd be fighting for the fourth spot, 4, 5, 6. You know, I'm looking at that West division, and the only clear-cut choices ahead of them right now today would be Vegas and Edmonton. You would like to say Calgary would, but we don't know how Calgary's going to settle. Anaheim is up in the air for me. Vancouver is really up in the air. Vancouver has more players than anyone else does. I mean, it just seems like they have lots of players, and we just don't know how their team is going to merit out. You know, I have a little system where I do their NHL roster and then their AHL roster and then their prospects. And I go through it. I do it 3 times a year, like extensively. So I can look at a page and look at an entire organization. And with them on their NHL side, I have, like, I don't know, like 20 guys. But I don't know who's NHL players and who's not. And I don't even know who's there and who's not. So I think they've got a ton of questions to answer. There could be nobody quieter in the NHL right now than San Jose. Like, do you hear a thing about San Jose? You know, Doug Wilson, who used to be involved in every single deal going on, is really, really quiet. Now, I think the one team of the California group that may be a little bit on the upswing because of prospects, and I know they're looking to do something, is the LA Kings. And, you know, they made the Arvidsson deal and brought a good NHL player in, and they've still got Kopitar, and they've still got, you know, a couple pieces. Jonathan Quick is still there, and that, and Drew Doughty is still, you know, a really good player. So I think they come up a little bit, but right now I'd have Seattle fighting 4, 5, 6 in that division.
And to that, Pooley, I guess fresh and new, pretty good system under Dave Hakstol, but their inability to score, as bad as Calgary and Vancouver may be, their high-end skill still has to trump what Seattle's going to put on the ice, does it not?
Well, it does, and Vancouver in particular, Simmer. I mean, you know, Elias Pettersson didn't play last year. I mean, he didn't play. And, you know, what effect does he have on a Brock Besser? And also, when you talk about a player like Pettersson, you plug him in, all of a sudden now Horvat's your second-line center. He's not your first-line center. And, you know, and what effect does that have on a JT Miller? And so, yes, they should be better. And once again, I just don't know where the rest of the roster is. Like, they went out a couple of years ago and signed, like, Antoine Roussel and Jay Beagle. Like, where do they fit in? You know, Brandon Sutter's a free agent. There's just so many names out there. Jake Furtan, and what are they doing with him? And so I think they've got to figure out their lineup on defense. They get thin in a hurry. They, you know, it looks like they'll lose Edler. Hamonic's a free agent. So they get thin in a hurry, and Nate Schmidt apparently, you know, wants to be on the move out of Vancouver as well. So when I look at a team like that and think if they do all the work that they should be doing, then that's going to shake up their roster, and it's also going to shake up other teams' rosters. So, boy, oh, boy, you know, we're sitting here on July 22nd. There's a lot of work to do for a lot of teams right now in the National Hockey League.
Ottawa loses Joey Decord. I think you had said yesterday you thought it might be Tierney, and those were the two at the top of, I think, a lot of people's list here in Ottawa as who they potentially could lose. I know it was a small body of work, but what were your thoughts on Joey Decord? And secondly, do you think them losing a prospect in the position, they still go six deep from NHL to prospects, do you think in any way that changes their number 10 pick in the first round regarding the two highly rated goalie prospects in tomorrow's draft?
I don't think it changes things for them. Joey Decord, small body of work. He was an intriguing kid to me, even back to his college decision to go to a brand new program at Arizona State. And then really bring that program to light. I mean, he's essentially starting over for the second time with an NHL expansion team. But he clearly, you know, will embrace the challenge. And he brought that program to life at Arizona State. It was his goaltending that put them on the map there. And, you know, a really small body of work in the NHL. And I think we all liked what we saw. We saw athleticism. We saw, you know, a prospect in his early 20s who came in and, you know, he didn't have a great win-loss record or anything. He didn't play a great number of games, played 9 NHL games. But he was someone who made an impression on you. But I don't think that changes their grouping in terms of who they pick. I think they'll have, you know, if they do, in fact, have an, you know, I mean, you go back and forth, and it's which one of the two goalies, you know, it might be. Wallstedt apparently appears to be, you know, a little bit higher on most boards than Sebastian Coss is, but I don't think it changes it, because if you said today you're going in and you said, okay, well, we think we're going to take Jesper Wallstedt with the 10th pick in the draft, and I don't mind taking a goalie high if your scouts have him high, and I just don't. I don't think it's an issue at all. I think if you can lock in that position for years to come, then you do it. But that being said, if, you know, one player in that first nine gets out of order, so, you know, I'm going to pick a name out of a hat, pick a, you know, Simon Edvinsson, the big defenseman in Sweden. Say he's slated to go in the top five, and all of a sudden he gets out of sequence, one guy, and it changes the top nine ahead of you, then you have to evaluate that. And, you know, I think I never minded having a goalie in there, and goalies are so hard to put in the sequence, guys. I think everybody handles their goaltending different, but when you sit in draft meetings, you know, the first time I sat in an NHL draft meeting and they're putting their list together, you know, I remember leaning out of the guy next to me saying, where are the goalies? Oh, they're on a list over there. It was almost in another room. Like, I'm like, okay, do they get to come into the, you know, the adults room at some point? But they merge their lists. Most teams merge their lists, and then they insert the goalies afterwards. And they do it geographically, and then you know, they have this whole separate goalie list and goalie world. And teams now are focusing a lot more energy on goalie departments and goalie scouting and having these goalie lists. But now you've got to walk over with that list and insert it into your main scouting list. And it's really, really challenging to do that. And, you know, you've got to have a goalie voice. You've got to have a strong goalie voice in that room. Mm-hmm. And because there are scouts that just say, well, I don't do goalies. You know, it's not what I do. And you know that. And so I think I'd be comfortable, by all accounts, it sounds like, with one of those two at that position. But so much depends on what happens in the 1 through 9 spots. And the picks that I'm intrigued with for Pierre Dorion and his group are 39 and 42. Because when you have two picks like that at the top of the second round, and they are now at the top of the second round, right, with 32 teams. Is someone going to make a play on those two picks because someone's left on the board they really like? And in a year when so little scouting was done, everyone in the NHL right now, guys, thinks they have a diamond in the rough. Everyone thinks they have a guy that didn't play this year in the OHL, who they really liked as an underage, who really made an impression somewhere along the line. Everybody has one or two or three of those guys. And so those two picks, 39 and 42, could turn into a valuable player for Ottawa, because the other thing you've got to factor in, the volume of picks that Pierre's had over the last few years, you can only have so many players at a certain age group, because if everyone's at the same age group, now you've got waiver issues after 3 or 4 years in the league, and you know, you've got all these different issues. They've got 11 picks next year, and they have such a strong group of players between pick at 18 and 23 years old, that they're going to start to lose those players on waiver situations, and you can't have too high a volume in there. So I could see those two picks, 39 and 42 for Ottawa, you know, causing a little commotion at the draft.
Yeah, last year they used the one on Murray, one on Stepan. We'll see what happens with that. Pooley to the goaltenders. In the case of Wallstad, if he is a blue-chip talent, if he's compared to Vasilevsky or Rask, if you're Seattle, based on the rest of the draft, would you ever take a goaltender at the two spot?
I think that's too high. I think you'd be working to move it down. You know, I've seen a number of those kids play now, that top group, you know, in some of the U18 stuff. And I don't, you know, that Matty Beniers certainly looks like, you know, and I watched him, he was an underage playing up, mm-hmm. and he made a huge impression on me. And, you know, the first time I saw him, he was the only uncommitted player to college. He was so young, and he was just terrific. That would have been an underage at the U18s, like long before the World Juniors. And, you know, an intriguing talent like that looks like he may be number two. McTavish has really risen, and he's an ingredient. And if I'm looking at the type of players that they took, the Tanev and Gord and, you know, even Donskoy and Appleton and Pitlick and those types of players, that's the Mason McTavish model, right? Hard to play against and, you know, aggressive and brings people to the party and all those different things. So I think that's too high. If I'm doing that, Zimmer, then I am moving the pick to a place where my scouts feel comfortable I can get that goalie, whether it be, you know, 7, 8, or 9.
So at the end of the day, is Marc Bergevin heaving a sigh of relief that he still has Carey Price with still 5 more years and $44 million, and who knows what's going on with his knee and his hip still in his organization, or is he maybe a little bit disappointed that he doesn't have $10.5 million of cap space to work with?
No, I think he's thinking the poker game worked, JR. I think he's thinking that the best case scenario now is that Carey Price gets healthy, that Jake Allen carries him through the first part of the season, you know, as a really, really strong 1A and gets them on board. And then in a worst case scenario is Carey Price, you know, really healthy down the stretch, because we know what he can do when he's really healthy down the stretch. We just watched it firsthand. So if he gets back for the last, you know, portion of the season and is healthy and can lead Montreal again down the stretch and into the playoffs, I think overall that Bergie's happy with the way it happened. I think the initial plan wasn't to lose Carey Price. It was to protect Jake Allen, and that worked.
What does it say about guys like Domi? 1 year left at $6 million. Zucker left 2 years at around the same money as to where their game is at. But especially in the case of Domi, when you look offensively where they're at, and wouldn't have been a whole lot of risk at 1 year.
It wouldn't have been. There was only 8 players, including the two guys that signed, right, Alexiak and Larson. That made a total of 8 players that have more than 1 year of contract left for Seattle. And, you know, it wouldn't have been. And that's personal flavor in that room, Zimmer. And we don't know the makeup of that room yet. You know, I mean, we know the names of the scouts, but we don't know what their thought process is as a group. And, you know, Max has really fallen out of favor in terms of a lot of people, the way they look at his game. I mean, this guy had 70-plus points a couple of years ago and, you know, was a first-line center in Montreal or a first-line player in Montreal. And, mm-hmm. and really dynamic, and that looked like just a terrific trade for Montreal. And then you look at it and say, it didn't work out moving forward into Columbus when it should have been a situation that would have been very attractive for him. So, you know, he's got one thing to do, and that's put it back on the rails. And, you know, and I think Max Domi will work hard to get that done.
By all accounts, the deal that Adam Larson signed in Seattle was offered to him by the Edmonton Oilers. It, you know, on the surface, you'd look at it and go, why would a guy ever go to an expansion team when he's playing with Connor McDavid? So why do you think he did what he did?
Just personal preference. That's a personality thing. And, you know, if the deal was in fact the exact same, then the player decided he needed a change. and we've talked about Edmonton needing to change, and you know what they're doing in Edmonton wasn't good enough, and you're saying, well, Ken Holland's going to change that. It's going to take time, but he's going to change that. And Adam Larson said, as a player, I have a chance to change it myself. And the excitement of going somewhere new. And you know, guys, you know, I've had a number of people reach out to me to watch the show last night, not to see who the players were, but to see how it was handled. And, you know, it was handled with a lot of flair and a lot of fashion and, you know, a lot of this Seattle's the greatest city in North America and look at how great we're going to be. And that's intriguing to people. And so, to me, that's a very personal decision for Adam Larson. Said, you know, I've been in Edmonton now, I've been in New Jersey, and I have an opportunity to go to a new market and get a whole fresh start on life, and I'm going to do that.
On a much smaller scale, I think Branstrom goes through that here in Ottawa, where, hey, you're not trying to crap on the player, but you're part of the Stone trade. You're the centerpiece. On Larson, would that have gotten old after a while? No, quieted down this year, but overall, just, hey, fresh and new and no pressure.
Yeah, that's part of it, and I think why it quieted down is because he played better, and Taylor Hall wasn't the MVP of the league. You know, it was a direct contrast when Larson first got there. I mean, there was a lot of what else is coming in the trade. You know, we couldn't have just traded Taylor Hall for Adam Larson. And Larson's a pretty good player, and he's, you know, he's a shutdown guy. He's not a Hart Trophy winner. He's not an MVP. So the fresh start is, I think, is really good for him.
Speaking of Edmonton, Zach Hyman is reportedly in Edmonton, and if he's visiting the city, I'm presuming that both he and the team have interest in him signing there as a free agent, whether his rights are going to be owned by the Oilers at that point or whether they wait until next week. It appears he's out of the financial realm of the Leafs being able to sign him. He's 29 years old. He's had some injury concerns, but boy, he's been an effective player when he's played with star players. So do you think that's a fit in Edmonton? And if it goes to 8 years, what's your level of concern on that for Hyman? For the Oilers, I mean.
Yeah, it would be high at 8 years for sure. And, you know, I mean, if you're Connor McDavid, you're pushing hard for this player because you've seen that he fits with really good players. He's a really good complementary piece. And I do think the Leafs come back after he gets, you know, home from Edmonton and makes a hard play for him. Now, hard play might not involve the dollars that he's going to see in Edmonton. It might not involve the term he's going to see in Edmonton. But it's going to involve, why would you invite a question about how you fit somewhere when you know you fit perfectly here? And, you know, so if you're Toronto, you're trying to do everything you can to remove the money equation from it and make it about fit. And make it about, you know, unfinished business, and make it about you're a Toronto kid, and, you know, anything you can do to sell the fact that your situation is more important than a monetary figure. And that's basically all they can do. Now, have, you know, once again, did they think they were going to lose Kerfoot in the expansion draft and gain $3.5 million and have that to play with? Did they think they were going to have some of their other situations cleared up? They've still got a goaltending situation here that they have to clear up financially, with limited money left. So, you know, I do think Toronto still makes another hard play at Zach Hyman. I don't think that's done yet. And once again, guys, when you go out and look at something else and you've been hearing how great it is somewhere else, and you go look at it for yourself and you walk into an environment and you really drill down and now you're saying, can I see myself here through my eyes? That very well may be a yes, and it very well may be a no. And you know, they're trying to make their superstars happy for sure. And I think the RNH deal was part of it, you know, because he's, you know, tight with Connor McDavid apparently and, you know, a very popular guy in the room, and they got him at their price. Now, can they do the same thing to add to one up and bring Zach Hyman in for those, one of those two guys? And I still think Toronto's going to make another hard play at it, guys. I don't think it's done yet. Now, I'm not saying that with any inside information, because at 10 o'clock this morning, it could announce, you know, that a deal's been done. I'm just saying it from the gut standpoint of a player who's, you know, been a free agent. When you look at other places, sometimes they're not as appealing as what you have.
Should Hyman sign for those types of dollars that are mentioned, term, mix in RNH, 2 years to Smith, adding Keith, losing Larson, are you a little nervous about where the Edmonton program's going?
Yeah, I don't know if overall they're better. You know, you've got to be better at the bottom of the day, and is you know, you've lost a couple big pieces in Klefbom and Larson on defense, and your defense wasn't great to start with, and you've lost two big pieces. So, you know, and Mike Smith had a great year, but you're adding another year onto his age. So I'm not sure they're better, Simmer.
All right, good stuff. Always appreciate the time and the insight. Tomorrow's draft day, and we'll see what happens when the rosters unfreeze at 1 o'clock today, be it via trades or whatever, signings. This should be an interesting day. Thanks for the time, Dave, and we'll chat tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
TSN's Dave Fullen on TSN 1200 is a presentation of Myers Automotive Group. See your Myers steal of a deal.
Welcome back, 848. Dave Cameron will be introduced officially as the 67's new coach at 10 o'clock this morning. If you missed, he was on with the boys from the drive yesterday afternoon. An interesting conversation. You can find it on our website at tsn1200.ca. In conjunction with his new job with the 67's, Dave also revealed he will be the head coach of Canada's World Junior team coming up this Christmas season. The tournament, by the way, again, will be in Edmonton. Last year was in Edmonton with no fans. This year it'll be in Edmonton with fans, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But Dave will be the coach, and Louis Robitaille, head coach of the Gatineau Olympics, will be the assistant coach, and James Boyd is part of the management team. So the fingerprints of Ottawa area junior hockey all over Canada's World Junior team.
Yeah, I mean, for a few pops, you can go over the team, and for Dave, a little redemption tour, and pretty cool to come back. And again, Jer, if you're coming back from professional hockey, Vienna, beautiful city. When you look at Ottawa and the program, the city itself, you've already been here, maybe still have your place. Hey, this is a great job to come into. And the fact you can coach the World Junior team, good for Dave. Like I said, I'm not sure. Hey, you don't even know if Andre Tourney is leaving. So you're sitting there, still had a year left in Vienna. Opportunity opens up. Couldn't think of a better fit for Dave, and hey, good for him, and good for Ottawa, and good for the World Junior team.
So Dave Cameron to be introduced at 10 o'clock this morning. At 10:30, Ottawa Senator General Manager Pierre Dorion is doing his final media Zoom call before this weekend's draft, and of course, next week is free agency, etc. Steve Lloyd and Graham Creech will take that as part of In the Box, so you'll hear from the Sens GM this morning at 10:30. Again, everything will be kept, any info will be kept close to the chest. Well, that Pierre's really the master of disinformation. Yeah. He's more of the master of, I'm not saying anything through the media. So, no. But we'll find out what he has to say today at 10:30.
Yeah, I think Brian Murray got into that zone as a schooled media guy. Your comfort with having some fun. Now Pierre Dorion's learned how difficult it is that everybody hangs on every word you say. So I don't think from an auto perspective, hey, the Decord thing will be asked. I think they probably had a pretty good idea it was going to be that. In a perfect world, now talk has already been floated out that they're going to try to move Dadonov and Tierney. I think Tierney comes here at 4.2, starts the year, maybe have a chance. I'd be beyond shocked on the case of Dadonov. Almost the same equation, JR. I don't think there's a market, so I guess
isn't
you come
every
back.
Team trying to trade its bad contract?
Oh, absolutely.
Right,
absolutely.
Always.
And to the way they finished and the way they played, like I said, on Tierney, if this is Tierney from 2 years ago, I think, first of all, he might have been taken. There was that much of a drop-off, and people have equated it in COVID, no camp. In the case of Dadonov, you're just praying and hoping that for that whole move and everything that happened, that both of these guys are better players. That's probably the card you're going to be dealt, so you might as well figure that out and hope they both come in ready to rock and roll.
My theory on Chris Tierney last year was that, you know what, it was going to be a down year for Ottawa, give them tons of ice time, give them power play, you know, bump up the points, sort of polish the apple, as it were, to be able to trade him at the trade deadline. Well, for a bunch of different reasons. First of all, his personal performance, for whatever reason, wasn't up to snuff. The team actually ended up getting better. He was kind of left behind. I wonder on a better Ottawa, what looks to be a better Ottawa team this coming season, whether that is even in the cards, that he is going to be able to play himself into a guy who could get power play time or get, I don't see him being a top two line player where he's going to be able to accumulate the kind of points that would enable you to say to a general manager at the trade deadline next year, hey, look what I have my Rolex here, and on my other side, I have a nice Chris Tierney that I introduce you introduce you to.
Well, and again, a few things here. You got to go through and examine the player. And for Chris Tierney a couple of years ago, the other thing we both had mentioned, I thought he'd sign a one-year contract. Now, they tried to get a little cute with going real low at 2.8, where now you're feeling the pain of the 4.2. Had he continued along as is, but I don't know why it wasn't just a one-year deal to start with. And when you look at Pierre Dorion, I understand the theory. A Tierney, a Gabranson, you go down Coburn, you wanted to bring in a bunch of placeholders to basically buy you time. unfortunately for Tierney, he wasn't a great skater. It dropped off so much because in a perfect world, 2 years ago, when you're talking right now to buy time for Pinto, the Tierney I saw 2 years ago would be fine to slide in that spot for right now. But right now, he's your fourth line center, and we don't even know who the second line center is at. So his game dropped off to that point that you can only hope it'll be better because it's not like he's 36 years old. I think this, well, you hope it might be a little bit COVID-related. Never a great skater, but last year was just a complete struggle for him.
The NHL will announce its regular season schedule tonight at 6 o'clock, so we'll get kind of a lay of the land. And again, things are expected to revert. Well, they are going to revert right back to normal. 82-game season. Ottawa will be back in the Atlantic Division. So set number of games against each team, interdivision, interconference, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
There is apparently, according to ESPN, going to be an Olympic break of about 16 days or so in early February. So at this point, and there's nothing confirmed that the NHL is going, but that's still on the table. So again, that will be revealed at 6 o'clock tonight. Yeah. The exhibition schedule was released yesterday. So Ottawa's got 7 exhibition games. First one is in Winnipeg, September the 26th, and then they've got 3 games with the Leafs and 3 games with the Habs over the next 2 weeks. So the schedule looks like it'll start, the regular season will start in and around October the 14th, so right after Canadian Thanksgiving or thereabouts. Yeah. So about 10 days later than it typically would.
Yeah, and laid out the exhibition schedule. A few things on the schedule. It will be interesting for the Ottawa Senators and any team if you go through a roster. For teams that had a shortened season, and I'll put Tampa Bay on that list, certainly even for Montreal, as teams start to lose players, you then go into a shortened season. If you've got a number of your players going to the Olympics, good luck post-Olympics down the stretch. And from an Ottawa perspective, I'm assuming Germany's in the A pool, so Stutzla probably goes. You comb through the roster, Zub, maybe Zaitsev. But each of the rosters, how they're affected, JR, in a shortened year, in a condensed season post-Olympics, that's where a young Ottawa team could take some advantage because, as I said, it's going to be too much for some teams. And I think Montreal, for lots of reasons. And, hey, if Carey Price is healthy right now, I'd have him penciled in as a goaltender for Canada.
Is Brady Tkachuk a for-sure U.S. Olympian or a maybe?
A maybe.
At this point.
Yeah, maybe. And only because the depth
they've got deep depth.
Yeah, they do. No, they got a hell of a hockey team. So I think at the end of the day you find a spot for him? Couple of things I do. You're playing on North American ice. It'll be where you're saying to yourself, I'm going to have to go against Canada. I'm also going back to 1996 in the World Cup of Hockey. If I'm the United States, I'm building my team to play Canada in the final. And with NHL referees, JR, in a small barn, I'd have him on my team at the very worst. Well, I'd throw him in on a fourth line. He wouldn't hurt you as a big body.
And you never, well, you typically wouldn't make decisions, roster decisions, based on because they make for good stories. But having two brothers who are the sons of, you know, an NHL great who scored 500 goals, that whole lineage to, you know, the past in USA Hockey and Keith Tkachuk, listen, Brady makes it on his own merits, don't get me wrong, but those sorts of things, they always make for nice stories as well. And you know, the NHL and NBC, they like to package up good stories when it comes to the Olympics.
NBC does a hell of a job. If you watch basically post-1980 and you go back to the teams in 84 and 88, those guys became household names in the United States. They never played in the NHL. You think of the Fusco brothers or different guys, JR. No, this is incredible marketing. But also to your point, I think there's incredible loyalty and respect to the Tkachuk family that within USA Hockey, I think it's going to help. If it's even close between another player, I think both of the Tkachuk boys end up going.
Actually, based on the way they played last year, maybe I should have framed it this way. Brady's a given is Matthew on the team, but that was just based on last year. It was not a very good year for Matthew Tkachuk personally in Calgary, so we'll see if that changed. I want to go back to one thing that Dave Poulin touched on, which as he explained it, I kind of went, well, that's kind of interesting based on what I saw on my TV last night. We're talking about Zach Hyman visiting Edmonton in person. And him talking, you know, and that would indicate that there is interest from he and his agent and certainly interest in the team in getting a deal done. And he said, well, when you're there in person, like Zach Hyman is, you get a chance to really drill down in the organization. Is this what I really want to do? And you're face-to-face with Ken Holland, et cetera, et cetera. And then I thought to myself, well, if I was pitching wanting to keep Zach or bring Zach Hyman to Edmonton, With all due respect to Ken Holland and his great resume from Detroit, what is the number one thing I'd, you know, and if I'm showing him around town and I'm trying to sell him on it, I'd be throwing him in Connor's Lamborghini or whatever, and we'd be tooling around the West Edmonton Mall parking lot and whatever else West Edmonton has to offer.
Yeah.
Connor McDavid, through my television last night, is at the TFC game. He's in Toronto. Yeah. He's not even in Edmonton when Zach Hyman is in Toronto when Zach Hyman's in Edmonton.
Yeah, I'm going to guess old Connor D. And
I know they have phones, and I realize that.
Well, maybe that's why Hyman's going to Edmonton, because there's been some courting in the GTA by Connor McDavid.
I also think guys are part of the Gary Roberts group as well, and it's a small group in Toronto. I don't think you need to do that. If you're Kenny Holland, what you want to do is lie about the weather. It is a Chinook season coming. This is basically what it looks like. And for Hyman, it's a good thing. And I always think back to Bobby Hull signing in Winnipeg, goes to put the socks on the next year, says, what the darn did I do? And in the case of Zach Hyman, this is really interesting because you have, and this is the leverage game that you play. And think about David Clarkson years ago. JR, what did he do? Rolled through Ottawa, had a big meeting, apparently an offer, rolls into Toronto. Mike Babcock did the same thing. The way this is playing out, my estimation, he is taking the Toronto Maple Leafs to the edge of the cliff. He's also taken himself. And for the Edmonton Oilers, if you are overpaying in money and term, do you imagine what it feels like if Zach Hyman calls you, just like Steven Stamkos did to Toronto, says, you know what, I decided to stay in Toronto. This is really going to be interesting that Toronto is almost doing the Stamkos move that Tampa Bay did, and I wouldn't rule it out that he goes back. And for Edmonton, it would be beyond devastating to go this far and realize, you know what, I can't even get a guy to come here for too much term and too much money because I just lost Larson for the exact same dough. So I think if you're Hyman, you're playing this properly. It's smart to go through it, but you're also sitting there, and then you're also, there is no doubt he's going to go back and say, listen, on a Toronto side, what's the best term and what's the best money you can do? And then you sit down and make a decision. And it also just tells me, you know, he's not completely sold, but he realizes if it's 8 years and it's $6.5 million, $52 million at 29 years old, pretty tough to turn down.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be so interesting. Yeah, to me, if he leaves Edmonton and there's not a deal done, or he's back open to Toronto, and maybe that's been the deal all along with Kyle Dubas. Maybe there's a mutual respect there enough to say, you know what, I'm going to give you a last chance, not necessarily to match, but to make a last best offer. I've got the Edmonton offer, and by the same token, and you would have gone through this in your time in Washington and in Toronto in the NHL, if you're Ken Holland. Do you let him leave without saying, I need a yes or no right now? Like, you let him go back to Toronto to take that last best offer from the Leafs?
Well, you try not to, but it's hard. It's courting. It's basically recruitment. It's like college. You know, you do your best, JR. You want a kid to commit to your school, to your program. But at the end of the day, we saw with Steven Stamkos. We really thought with Tampa, well, he's gone to free agency. The end of the day, when Edmonton, you look at it, and I know it's a cold place. Edmonton is a metropolis. It's one of the greatest cities on the planet. Edmonton is Edmonton. It's a whole different world, a whole different lifestyle. This is a Toronto kid that I think comes from a decent background. You know, you'd sit down there and say, okay, so Toronto goes back and says, listen, I'll give you 6 years. I'll give you $30 million. Would you be willing to leave $18 million on the table? It's a lot of money, but it's a tough decision for an athlete to make. And this is the other dilemma. You hate on the other side of Edmonton. You end up landing the player, but does he truly want to be there? I know he'll be fine once he goes, but that's a spot that the Edmonton Oilers are. And I asked Pooley, like, you've signed RNH to too much term. He's not even a guy I'd have on my team if I'm trying to win the playoffs. You're then going to go Hyman, Smith at 2 years. Keith is a replace for Larson, Klefbom gone. Honestly, that is not a very good thing if you're the Edmonton Oilers.
But you're all in at this. You know what?
Oh, absolutely.
To
are.
Me,
yeah,
you got
yeah.
McDavid oh, has to sure, be, sure. you know, if yeah. he's not already, he's getting frustrated. Dreisaitl to a lesser extent, same sort of thing. Yeah, if you're, you're Ken Holland, you got to get it done here in the next year or two. So you massively overpay. You're trying to keep, and Poulin said, you know, you got to keep the stars happy, man. If it doesn't work, you're getting fired, and the six more years on Zach Hyman's contract, man, doesn't matter.
Oh, no,
you're
it
on
doesn't.
The beach in Hawaii. You're retired. You got your money.
No, for sure.
You're trying to make it happen short term.
Yeah, and it just really points to, this is the whole part, and I wondered with Driedger, and I know he wasn't property of or necessarily an outright free agent. I see that money come across the board. Personally, I would look in Edmonton. I would have been getting real bold with Florida, but maybe it wasn't even there, Jer. But the first thing, if they don't even repair their goaltending going into the year, I don't care if they got all the free agents. I don't care if Larson stayed, Dougie Hamilton comes in, they do a couple of other things. They don't have goaltending that can take you to the promised land or even necessarily take you to the playoffs.
When you think about, so Edmonton, and this is, you know, the rumored deal is that Mike Smith at 39 is getting 2 years and $4 million. And Chris Drieger is, and again, these deals will all become official later today, probably, is going to get 3 years at $3.5 million. And again, this is, and I know you're a fan of what you've seen of Drieger, and you think
he's a
player.
Yeah.
And who knows what the Edmonton scouting report is, but let's say it's decent. You know, to think that you would only have to pay an extra $1.5 million to get a guy who's whatever he is, 13 years younger. And yeah, you got to go an extra year, and you would maybe have to, you know, Florida gave Seattle the player, like let him pick, like you could have traded him to Edmonton, his rights to Edmonton, and gotten something for him, a draft pick, a prospect, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Edmonton for $1.5 million more a year gets a guy who's way younger. Yeah, again, this is on the premise that their scouts are sold on Drieger
as a guy.
But I just look at it and go, I got a 39-year-old guy I'm giving a 2-year contract to, or I got a 26-year-old guy who showed some nice upside that can maybe grow with my program for only $1.5 million more a year.
Yeah, and it's incredible within their program itself. A couple of years ago, the Finnish goaltender that Colorado drafted, I think Edmonton drafted the Rodriguez kid 2 picks ahead of him. You talk about a goalie graveyard. So, yeah, you had to be bold and creative. And Drieger, I match up his stats with Craig Anderson. I also watched Drieger play, and I watched Craig play in Florida before he signed with Colorado. I see a lot of parallels, Jer. I'm bullish on the player. We'll see what happens. People then bring up Scott Darling or other things. I don't see that. But from an Edmonton perspective, and you go down, as I said, and one thing with Florida I just wanted to go back to as well, Jer, is that when we talk about assets, turning the page a little to Ottawa on Wallstad, one thing I brought up yesterday is that if you do get into a good spot, think about from a Florida perspective, when they signed Bobrovsky, they still drafted Spencer Knight. I know logic would say go a different direction, but can you also imagine the value that Spencer Knight had as in taking the best player? Do you know what I mean? Where, hey, organizationally, you don't always have to do that. Mm-hmm. The goaltending part to be, and it also puts them in a position where they know the Bob is terrible, but at the same time, they got Spencer Knight stepping in, and they're allowed to let Drieger go. And I do think that Joel Quenneville is giving a nice check off to his buddy Ron Francis in this case as well.
Right. One last text this hour on this topic of Zach Hyman. Why isn't Hyman being wooed to Ottawa by Connor Brown? So there you go. Of course, spent some time together. And I'm not sure if that's serious or that's tongue-in-cheek, but if we're to take it as serious... I know this is me personally. And again, I love the way that Zach Hyman played in Toronto, and I got all kinds of time for him. But in terms of the term and the money and the age and everything, he does. That's not a fit, in my opinion, for Ottawa at all.
Well,
he's a better offensive player than Connor Brown, but they are kind of, in my opinion, somewhat similar players. Ottawa doesn't. You'd love to have him, but not at that term and that money at that age.
Not
for me.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I don't think he necessarily is, Jer. And I'll go a little bit down the stretch. I'll go a little bit of the World Championship. So the last couple of years, if Connor Brown had played with Matthews and Marner, I think he's actually a better player. You also, with Connor Brown, before the year ends next year, you're going to look at extending him. And if I were doing a depth chart right now, I would go Batherson, Connor Brown, and Zach Hyman. If you were to sign him here in Ottawa, personally, I would have him penciled in as my third line left winger or right winger. So no, I think there's going to be a real nice carryover with Connor Brown. So not a fit whatsoever here in Ottawa.
Yeah, and even though he's a right shot, he's played a lot of left wing. And if Ottawa has deep depth anywhere, it's left wing right now. With if Stützle remains at left, and of course Tkachuk is there, and you got Formanton, presumably will be in the NHL this year. I mean, they've got a lot of depth at left wing. So. I don't see Zach Hyman being a fit for a bunch of different reasons in Ottawa.
No, and again, you know, not that the house will ever be completely clean, but when I'm also trying to figure out, Dadonov's not going anywhere, Jer. He's coming back. He's a right winger. You tried to tuck him on a third line. You tried to sit him out a little bit. You tried to get him going. Like, you don't just make this money disappear and then bring in the next problem. There's nobody, including the Toronto Maple Leafs, is not telling you they're going to overpay for Zach Hyman. Why in God's name would Ottawa go down that path right now? You know, Zaitsev has come in and given you some value. You got to get White to Murray to Dadonov to Tierney. Get your own house in order before. Well, they're not going down that path, but it would not make sense on any level.
I'll go back to JR's theory on team building. Would you rather pay a very good player to star player for the 6 to 7 years when he's 22 to 29, or would you rather pay him when he's 29 to 36? Right? It's just common sense. Ottawa needs to lock down the players that they have. They're at a desirable age right now and look like they're going to, and if not there already, will develop into the types of player that Zach Hyman is right now. And you're going to be paying Zach Hyman within a year or two for what he's done in the past for six more years as opposed to what you're going to do for me in the future.
Yeah, and the other complete failure the teams run into, and the Calgary Flames have done this for years. I'm sitting on a little bit of cash in the summertime. I'll turn around and sign a Brouwer. I'll turn around and sign a guy like Neal. You know what, Jer, if you're sitting on it this year, it doesn't mean you have to fill it up. At some point, you're going to have to sign some players and do some things. And also, I'll say in Landeskog, there's no doubt within 3 years that he's going to be a broken-down player. History just tells you when you come into the league at 18, by the time you reach your 30s, I don't care how skilled you are. It's going to be a lot of wear and tear, and there's a tremendous risk.
All right, a little past 9 o'clock. Thoughts on any of that? Always welcome. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll continue the discussion, get more of your feedback throughout the next hour. Don't forget, again, Pierre Dorion will speak this morning at 10:30. You'll hear it right here on TSN 1200.